Hi, this is Eric Carlson, and you're listening to the Sense Call-Ups.
Studio 65 of the Sens Underground Network. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 10 of the Sens Call-Ups for Wednesday, November 20th, 2013. I'm Cardinal, and as usual, Canuck and Pan are here as well. This team, what can you say? They always seem to start slow, give up the first goal, play from behind, and it only works some of the time. They're uptight, they seem to be lacking in confidence, finesse, coordination. You can use a lot of words to describe a team that looks to be being crushed by expectations created by two seasons of what many have described as overachieving. How to right the ship? Lots of questions, but right now, I don't think anybody has the answer. You can email our show at podcast@sendscallups.com. You can find us on Twitter, and you can participate in the online forums. And believe me, game threads are a great place to share rage with other listeners when there's a game going on. Boys, so what's up with you? Frustration, rage, sad, but I'm asking other than traffic rage, because I know
you're talking about that today. No, I was going to go into traffic. It was a disaster today. I don't know if I've talked about the traffic in Ottawa on this show.
Not at all. How is it?
Not yet on this episode.
Cards, remember that that secret area that you told me to go by, to go Innis through Industrial into Riverside?
Yes.
Yeah, no. No.
Okay.
Holy hell. So I bailed out of that, went down Montreal Road. That was even worse.
Well, that was the one I suggested, and you said no to that too.
Yeah, it was a disaster. Oh. I basically did both tricks at once. Both of them failed.
Oh, dear. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, something, because I think I left the house at 7:45. It said where I need to be down at Preston. And GPS said 8:09.
Yeah. 9:09, maybe.
Yeah, 8:55.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's like an embarrassment. I was driving around all day, so going back and forth. I did traffic, rush hour 4 times today.
Charming. Well, I can sympathize with that. I had to go out to Kanata at mid-afternoon this afternoon. And no, the traffic was okay until I got stuck behind somebody doing 85 in the right-hand lane.
No,
they were swerving all the way over into the bus lane, and then all the way back into their right-hand lane, and then over into the middle lane, missing the car that was right beside them in the middle lane by less than a mirror width, and they did this twice. And you know why?
Texting.
Yep.
No, seriously?
Yep. I finally got a chance to go around him, and I did, and he was looking down at his phone again and not paying attention to where he's going, but he started coming towards me, so I laid into the horn, and he looked up and then gave me the finger because apparently I was disturbing his texting. It's all about
texting and driving. You know how weird this season is, actually? Okay. Chuck Prowse is 9-12 in the game predictions.
Ooh.
And he's normally way accurate.
Well, isn't everybody kind of way off? I don't follow the game prediction. Yeah. Thread. So
we're not even close. I think I'm 9-10, and honestly, I'm missing things in there, so that doesn't really count. Senior's leading because he's just being a jerk.
Well, he's doing what worked for him last time.
Other guy. Hey,
it's working for him. That's the problem. Is the 3-1 for the other team is becoming far more accurate than it was last year. Canuck, how are you?
I'm doing quite well. I'm actually calling in live from Dallas, Texas tonight. Been down here this week today was cold, but yesterday was quite warm. I won't get into the Celsius and Fahrenheit thing and confuse all our listeners, but can't complain. I don't need a jacket out there. It's quite nice.
Well, then it's not cold. That's good.
I'm here all this week for training, so we're doing the old remote Studio 65 tonight. And actually, though, cool note is tomorrow night I'm going to meet a listener down in this area. Chad got in touch with us. And long story short, we're actually going to go check out the Rangers at Stars game tomorrow night. So neat to meet a listener. And he pulled in some favors and got us a couple tickets to go to the Stars game. So get to see that arena and reunite with Gonchar.
Say hi to Sergey for Gabrielle.
We'll do.
Gabrielle sent me a message here. She's going down to the game that's starting shortly. So she's on the bus.
And
she just said, "Go Leafs, go!" chant on the bus, resisting the urge to tell them to SCFU only because there are children here.
Nice. Well, you guys are really becoming the ambassadors for this podcast. You meet people out of town as well as in town.
Yeah,
I don't meet anybody.
It's because no one hangs out at the lake with the internet.
That's okay. No. I don't think if somebody wants to go fishing, I'm always up to go fishing, but
no.
Anyway, we'd like to get through this podcast recording in time to maybe catch the end of the game that's about to start. So
they'll be done in the first 5 minutes, more likely than not.
Easy now. Dang. You might be right, but come on.
Yeah. All right, here you go. Game on!
T19, Friday, November 15th, the Bruins versus the Senators. This was a game where we were all holding our collective breaths going, oh, dear, what is going to happen in this one? And it turned out better.
Did you see my game prediction on that one?
No.
Boston 14, Ottawa 2.
Oh, well, that's being
confident. I had zero hope going in this one. You set the bar low, right?
Well, especially after...
set the bar low and exceed expectations. Then
we came off the loss against... Oh, no. Who did we lose against right before?
I think that's just the rest of the week.
Yeah.
I can't remember. We did, actually.
Yeah. Continue on.
Exactly. So, this game, a couple of interesting notes just at the beginning of the game. The starting defense pair was, I'm struggling. I've been awake since 4 again this morning, so if I am a little slow, I apologize. It was Cowan and Greiba. Interesting pair to start the game with. Maybe a confidence move by the coach. Who knows?
Nope. Chris Neal starts every frigging game.
I don't know. Anyway, first couple of minutes, Sens were struggling to get out of our own zone, and getting the puck across the Boston blue line seemed almost impossible because even if we got out of our own zone, plays were broken up at the Boston zone, right at their Boston blue line. Just we weren't getting in. We were getting two, but we weren't getting in. At the 6:03 mark, Grant lost a faceoff and got his stick broken by a shot that then deflected. And it's behind Anderson. So the shot was off his stick and in.
Bad luck play.
Yeah, bad luck play. I mean, if the shot breaks your stick, it's also a pretty heavy shot.
Yeah.
To be honest. So 6:03, we're down 1-0. So, I mean, the good news was we didn't get scored on in the first 5 minutes. All right. That's not bad. But it's still 1-0 already at 6:03. I was listening to this game on the radio and watching it on TV. I was moving back and forth. Around the 8-minute mark, the radio guys were like, look at the Bruins skate. You wouldn't know that they played last night. They're just all moving. But they might run out of gas at this pace. An omen. Truth-telling there. Who knows? At the 8-minute and 30-second mark, there was a big center ice hit by Cowan. It's like, ooh, is he getting on his game? What's this about? This is good. All right, let's see what happens next. And what happens next is at the 9-minute and 50-second mark, Marchand scores by a shot that goes off the crossbar and in. Oops. Oh, well, so much for the big hit by Cowan, maybe a bit of an energizer.
Redacted.
Yeah. And right after that goal, the radio guys, because I was listening to the radio again for a few minutes, the Bruins are just coming in waves. Like they know they're tired and going to need to get on the Senators, who are struggling their own end, early before they tire out again. Foreshadowing, perhaps. Who knows? At the 11:21 mark, they noticed that the shots on goal to that point in the game, Boston 10, Ottawa 2.
Yeah, but we do good. When the Corsi's not in our favor, that's when we excel.
Oh, okay.
Because our shots are good.
Okay.
Was it Earth save percentage was better though?
Okay, sure. Well, by that point, no, it wouldn't be because this is the fourth time this season the Sens have played a team that played the night before, and it's the fourth time that the other team has scored first. It's not a good record.
Fourth time.
And looks like they have more energy.
Yeah, 4-4. Not good.
Oh, 4 in a row. Okay, I see what you mean.
Late in the period, the Senators start to apply a bit of pressure. Ryan gets a shot off the stanchion that comes out to MacArthur with a chance, but he's on his backhand. Got past Rask, just dribbled wild. Dribbled wide. Close, but not quite. Just before the 19-minute mark, Neil makes a huge hit in center in the middle of center ice. Big hit. Energizes the crowd, and 10 seconds later, scores! Unassisted. So suddenly it's 2-1, less than a minute to play in the first period. Good news.
Were you channeling your inner Bob Cole there?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
I was just trying to shake you up. I didn't think you were expecting that. I won't do it for the rest of the game summary. It's okay. End of the period, shots by the Bruins 13, Senators 6. However, again, I'm watching the faceoffs numbers. Faceoffs Boston 12, Ottawa 12. So we're getting outshot, but we're even in faceoffs. This is going to be important to watch later on.
Terrible for Corsi.
Second period begins with more Bruins domination in our own zone. 3 minute and 5 second mark, Boston penalty. 2 minutes for hooking Borowiecki. The power play isn't great, but it's not as woeful as some games. There was some puck movement, and there was a problem in the middle of the power play, however, because suddenly nobody knew who was going on and who was coming on, who was going out when the power play first unit was coming in. Oops. And in the first 5 minutes of the period, Boston has one shot on goal. The Senators have five. Interesting. Zach Smith takes 2 minutes for kneeing Patrice Bergeron. I forgot to write down the time for that one. Sorry. And during that penalty kill, Anderson was screaming at the ref that he was interfered with by Chara, but no call. Overall, good penalty kill. Period ends with better sustained pressure by Ottawa. Is Boston getting tired? Question mark. That's my notes. Shots by Bruins, 9 for a total of 22. Shots by the Senators, 7 for 13. But now Ottawa leads in faceoffs, 25-21. Turris, by the way, is 11-3 to this point in the game. Third period. 1 minute and 32 second mark. Spezza goal. It was Spezza's first shot on goal in this game at the 1:32 of the third period. Ties the game with assist to Carlson McCulloch. At the 5 minute mark, it was a no goal for Boston. The whistle had been blown when Seidenberg poked, prodded, shoved, and everything else he could think of to get the puck out from underneath Anderson's glove and in. So
yeah, well, that's okay. They always get the no goals right.
Yeah.
At the 5 minute 42 second mark, just 42 seconds later, Cowan scores with assist to Konecker and Spezza. Like, hey, we got a lead. What the heck? The 8 minute mark, there's a 3-on-1 with Neil Smith, and I couldn't catch the name of the third player, but Rask me to save. It was a beautiful 3-on-1, though. At 10 minutes and 11 seconds, Bobby Ryan, with that wickedly beautiful steal, scores unassisted, and the building is rocking, at least on the radio and TV. It was loud. Loud.
That was fun.
It was wicked good. 11:45, Anderson makes a brilliant stop on a shot from Chara that was just a rifle shot through traffic. Nobody could figure out how he actually saw it, let alone managed to stop it. 12 minutes and 30 seconds, MacArthur strips the puck in the Boston zone, gets it to Bobby Ryan, who does a beautiful dipsy doodle. That was the radio play, or the TV play-by-play guy's term, dipsy doodle. But it was a beautiful save by Rask. 16-minute mark, there's a blatant elbow by Seidenberg to Bobby Ryan behind the Boston goal. Ryan goes straight to the dressing room. No call. Nope. No penalty call. And as we found out afterwards, no supplementary discipline either, because it's okay, apparently, to elbow somebody in the head if you're fighting for the puck.
Clearly. Not that he's a star or anything, right?
Yeah. That's okay. You're allowed to do that because they were fighting for the puck. So it's okay to elbow somebody in the head if you're doing that. At the 16:52 mark, Iginla elbows Konecker behind the net. This one gets called.
I think that was a makeup.
It was weak, but it was definitely a makeup call going, okay, well, he missed the last one. But anyway. End of the game, final score 4-2, shots on goal, Bruins 32, Senators, who had 18 in the third period, 31. But the faceoffs, Boston 26, Ottawa 38. Turris was 17-4 in this game.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty damn good. A couple of notes just at the end of the game. There were 8 turnovers in the first period. 8 turnovers are giveaways, but there were only 12 in the whole game. So the team definitely played better as the game went on. Whether this has to do with Boston getting tired, who knows? And post-game comment from the coach, he said, when asked about whether it should have been a penalty called on Bobby Ryan, he said, "I don't have orange armbands. All I know is that the only time it's a penalty is when the orange armband goes up in the air. Doesn't matter what I think of it, what you guys think of it, what anyone thinks of it. It's not a penalty until the guy with the orange armband puts his hand up. It obviously wasn't a penalty."
Yeah.
What a great quote.
I know he's under a lot of heat right now, but man, I love Paul McLean.
He's good.
That's just like last year. I don't remember what it was. Remember when his response was just a stare?
Yeah. It was about reffing too.
Friggin' awesome.
So there you go. 4-2 win over the Bruins last Friday. And the world was a good place. It was a very good place at that particular point.
Bring on the Blue Unfortunately, Jackets.
Unfortunately with this team, that doesn't always stay. Sunday, November 17th was game number 20 against the Blue Jackets who were visiting. Ben, you have this game summary.
Yeah, so I went to this game.
What time of the day was this?
1 PM.
Yeah. I'm sorry I missed this one. I had a family birthday to go to.
Don't be. So, like, literally my day was absolutely cut in half. I know I tweeted this, too, because everyone's freaking out about it, and apparently it's with the TV. I don't think we're talking about this later, right? But with the TV rights and the revenues to the team where the Senators would prefer to just have it on Sportsnet because they make more money than actually filling the building and selling concessions. Yeah. Hey, you're not the NFL. And don't forget, everyone, that CBC's in contract year. So hopefully CBC will pay all the teams more to get them in prime time. So yeah, 1 o'clock in the afternoon was just friggin' brutal. Cut my day right in half. Anyway, so Nick Foligno was in, which was very nice to see him. He got a good cheer, I guess, during the TV timeout. Final score, Columbus 4, Ottawa 1. If they're not going to try on the ice, I'm not going to try my game recap. Absolutely nothing to talk about in this game. Just
it was 4-0 until late in the third when Carlson scored.
It's just... Yeah, Carlson saves us the utter embarrassment of getting shut out.
Again.
Yeah. And even that. And the only one that really gave a crap was Mark Borowiecki, who was just awesome. Downed a guy, and then he had to fight Wisniewski, which was beautiful.
Oh, I didn't catch that. I'll have to go back and find that.
That was the only thing that was good in that game for the Senators.
Oh, dear.
Oh, next.
Dear. Yeah. Well, I'd like to say it gets better.
Uh-oh.
But the next game is Tuesday night. Senators at the Philadelphia Flyers. Robin Leonard in net. Bonk's mullet in attendance. So, let me just wrap up this game for you. First period. Sens go 0-for-3 on the power play. Philly goes 1-for-1 on the power play. End of the first period, it's 1-0 Philadelphia. Period two starts off pretty early with Sean Couturier taking a really odd shot from the side. Bad angle, sneaks past Robin Leonard. Now 2-0 Philly. Deflating goal. Ottawa now trails 2-0 for the 11th time in 21 games this season. 11 out of 21 times we're starting off 2-0. Down. Not good.
I'm pretty sure that's all the games that I've been to. I think I've been to 12 this year out of the 21.
Because you're doing the road games too, that's right.
Yeah, it's intense.
So, nevertheless, the game does go on. Sens start showing a little bit of life. And on a power play that Ottawa has, MacArthur finally puts one past, and it's now 2-1 Ottawa. Way to go, MacArthur.
You did it!
Late in the period, Greening and Luke Shen have a bit of a tilt, that's about it. They're now 2-1 Philadelphia at the end of the second period. Now, in the third period, Another power play for Ottawa, and Turris scores. It's now 2-2. And Ottawa is very much back in this game. Looks like the momentum's going their way, and we have hope. A little bit later, there's a pretty freaky play. It starts off with Bobby Ryan doing a dangle, gets around the goalie, comes out in front to Turris for an empty net, and Turris shoots the puck in. Oh, but what a brilliant toe save by the skater. And the play goes on for a few minutes, but when the play does stop, they review it, and it looks like that puck may have gone in. So there's quite a lengthy review, and they take a long time to look at this. Certainly from the angle seen on TV, it does look like the puck does go in the net. But because it was called a no-goal on the ice, and there's no definitive look on the replay to prove it's all the way in, it is counted as a no goal. And I think at this point, the team deflates because immediately score 3-2 Philadelphia, and another quick goal, 4-2 Philadelphia. And all I can say to that is...
butt scratch, yeah.
Okay.
Late in the game, Turris is hauled down on a breakaway. Turris is given a penalty shot. What chance for us to maybe salvage ourselves back into this game? Turris goes in really slow, tries an easy backhand, even drops his stick.
No, did he drop his stick?
Yeah.
Butt scratch, yeah.
So apparently the Sens don't do shootouts. They're 0 for 6 in the last 6 attempts at shootout penalty shots, and now an official penalty shot during the game, nothing. We don't do penalty shots.
They're just handling their inner Filatov.
Yeah. And just to add insult to injury, empty net goal, Adam Hall scores. Final score, 5-2. Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And everyone goes back to the no goal. I think it probably was a goal, but it was called no goal on the ice. And with all due respect, it did look like it was not a goal live. So I get it that the ref called it a no goal. Unfortunately, there's no angle on the replay to show it coming in because the overhead angle you can't see as the defenseman or apologize, I forget the player, the Philly player skater was standing over top of where you would see this. The side angle, it did appear as if it was going in, but sometimes those are hard to tell. So a lot of talk about that. That was definitely a momentum shift. Ottawa had the momentum. There's this big long delay and then no goal. Having said that, though, I don't understand how, as a team, you just deflate and not do anything. So, yeah, no goal, big deal. It happens. But all of a sudden, then they just give up in two quick goals. They let that deflate. You can't do that as a professional team.
Yeah, just go get the next one.
Yeah. I mean, they knew it was no goal. They were playing like that wasn't a goal. It went on for about a minute or so before they stopped and reviewed it. The other thing I want to bring up, why doesn't the league put a damn chip in the puck and end this nonsense? This is not hard technology. The technology's there. It will not affect the way the characteristics of the puck. These things are teeny, teeny, tiny. I'm not talking about the Fox Blue puck.
No.
All it takes is something in there, and it takes away all element of doubt. Is it over the line? Yes or no? They will know. But instead, they operate on the system, which introduces error. Just saying. Well,
they have to have some method of introducing bias into a game.
But it would have to have like the whole perimeter and whatnot of the puck, though. You're the tech. You make it.
It can be done. It can be a teeny, teeny, tiny chip in the middle of the net. And as soon as it crosses a line, that puck is in. This is not hard technology. It can be done. I'm not saying it doesn't come with challenges, but, you know, this is something they should look at, and especially important games. This wasn't an important game per se, but, you know, you're talking Stanley Cup finals and playoffs and that sort of thing. And you don't want to get this stuff wrong.
No, but
just saying.
It's not good for the purists of the game, though.
I think it's a bit like...
Oh, you mean like the Don Cherries, those kind of purists?
They love the gray area. Without the gray area, there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
It's just the human element, which is in any professional sport, whether it's the guy who the umpire who made the bad call, which cost the guy the perfect game last season or the season before, or during the lockout in the NFL where they had the touchdown where one ref said it was a touchdown and one said it wasn't. You know, it just that just happens.
That was
even this, or even this past weekend, the New England game where it was that was pass interference. No, it wasn't. Oh, let's have a confab. Okay, no, it's not. You know, it happens. And it's unfortunate, but I don't think technology will ever be able to fix that sort of thing. And I agree, it would be in this particular game, it's just your average game. It's not game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, but it's going to be that way no matter what. I don't think you can take it out all the time. It's a lot better than it used to be with the camera angles and high definition, everything else that we used to have compared to what we used to have, but it'll never be perfect.
And I want to be clear, I'm not putting this loss on the fact that that was called a no goal.
Oh, no.
The reaction to it, I'm putting on the loss. They deflated on it.
I only caught bits and pieces of this game, either on TV or on the radio. And the one thing that I found very interesting was in the post-game show, Robin Leonard admitted this was not a good game. He did not play well. This was... You know, part of this loss was definitely on him because he let in a couple that he really shouldn't have.
Release the Andy.
Yeah, there we go. So now what? It was just one of those moments where you go, okay, well, that's guy taking the loss and putting it on himself. That's pretty cool. But it wasn't a good game from what the little pieces that I saw, and especially what I've been reading and hearing today. Not as bad as the 5-0 game against the Flyers, but again... The Flyers, I think, are a much better team than their record up to this point has been showing. And yeah, that's why.
They got hot on that first game.
Yeah, and they've but been... Yeah,
well, that's some good math there, Cardinal. Yes, 5-2 is better than 5-0.
Thank you. I try. I can't do Corsi, but I can do simple math.
No one should do Corsi.
But, I mean, they've also beat the Penguins and somebody else between those games, so they're doing pretty darn well at the moment. So... Anyway,
last night in Philadelphia was a game you want to forget about. So thank goodness there's a game tonight and they can jump back on the horse and do something about it. Because normally when we lay this kind of egg, we have to wait 3 or 4 days for the next game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how this turns out.
Well,
it's a game that's just starting in about 10 minutes from this very moment.
So let's power through the rest of it so we can watch it.
Well, a couple of notes about tonight's game before we move on. Both teams are on the second night of a back-to-back because Minnesota played last night in Montreal. It's a Heritage Sweater game. It's a national broadcast on TSN. But the last time it was a Heritage Sweater game and broadcast nationally, that was against Montreal, and the Senators won. And they actually have a pretty good record against... Was Leonard Nets against Montreal?
That was Leonard. Anderson's terrible in the Heritage jersey. Actually, you know what? Thank you for bringing that up. I think it's because the socks are black. So he might lose the puck in the pants and he's not used to that color of pants.
Oh, of the defenseman or the other skaters? Okay.
Yeah, not that they're blocking shots this year, but because if you're used to red or white, then you throw in black, 10 games a year or something like that? That might just make him off by a little.
Never know.
Yeah.
Interesting thought. Personally, if they lose tonight, I'm blaming Senzgab because the team's 0-1-3 when she's at the game. So she's there tonight. So if they lose, it's all her fault.
How did you keep track of that?
She tweeted it.
Oh. Sorry. I can't tweet and drive.
But speaking of the Heritage sweater, there's a new... Heritage game, or there's a new sweater that's going to be released for the Heritage Classic game in Vancouver this coming March. And it's being released, I believe, on the 28th of this month.
Yeah, Friday, I think.
No, it's Thursday when the
Canucks next week.
Are here.
Yeah, okay.
Next Thursday. Now, we don't know what this is going to look like yet.
I think I do.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Well, there's been some stuff leaked.
No. I know what it is. It's with the Melnick budget cuts. It's going to be the old SNES jerseys with Kovalev on the back.
Oh.
Because he still has piles of those that he's selling.
All SNES jerseys with Kovalev.
Yeah. You got to get rid of them somehow.
So every player will be number 27.
Will they have a Scotiabank scarf there too?
Yeah.
Can we get Bob Cole to call that game? That could be pretty funny. If everyone's wearing 27.
Kovalev to Kovalev. He's right.
No, he would still be calling the Sens player. I just found it interesting that they're releasing the sweater next Thursday. But you can pre-order one now.
Yeah.
We have blind faith in this team.
Why would I order something when I don't even know what it looks like?
Sens! Go! I'm pretty sure Sylvie's already bought it, though, to be honest.
Unreal. I just thought
she loves her merch, yeah.
Does she?
Oh, yeah.
Who?
Okay. I just thought that was the weirdest concept. You can pre-order something, then you don't even know what it looks like. I mean, if they were to release it and say, well, we're not taking orders until the 28th, okay.
We did this at the grocery store when I worked there, when we'd have the damaged cans where the labels would pull off. So we'd actually grab a black Sharpie, put question marks all over it, right?
Is it
mystery can for a dime?
Is it peaches? Is it dog food?
One lady bought it. She's like, I just got to find out.
Well, okay, but that's fun. I wouldn't mind that.
Hey, we made a dime out of something.
Well, better than nothing. Because a food bank can't even take that if they don't know what it is.
Nope.
Why not? Anyway, I just thought that was bizarre. You want me to order something and I don't even know what it looks like yet. Right. Okay. Let's stick with that idea because there's no problem with it. Come on.
Well, it's kind of like how I bought my season tickets this year, isn't it? I had no idea of the disaster that we were heading for.
Oh.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
No refunds.
Moving on. I was thinking the other day.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. Very dangerous. Could you smell the smoke? I certainly could. I'm burning something out doing that. Is Corey Conacher the new Ryan Shannon? He's a smallish player who is quite mobile, can score sometimes, but just doesn't seem to be able to be effective no matter, like, it's not a lack of effort. It's not a lack of desire. It's not even a lack of talent. It's just lacking the size to be able to play effectively in the role that he's trying to play, in any role, really. What do you think?
I think he's a damn good comparison. But Conacher's got a hell of a lot more, I think a lot more skill.
This guy was a favorite down in Tampa Bay.
Yes. Yeah,
for the 30 games that he was there, though, right?
I was going to say, kind of like...
I really like him, too.
Although, I guess he did score a lot early in the season. And, you know, when you score a lot, I get it. You're going to be a favorite quick.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to score a lot when you're playing with Vincent LeCavalier and... Was he with Saint-Louis or Stamkos? He was with basically the best other players. Yeah. You're going to score a lot when you're playing with those two.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know. A good comparison, but I think Conacher is better than Shannon.
I do. I think he's better than Shannon, but I think he may be limited in his upside because of his size.
Listen, just play the backdoor play on the power play. You're going to get yourself 15 goals because people can't see you there. Backdoor wing.
Maybe. You never know. I'm not giving up on him. I was just thinking back over the last number of games where I've been watching him play, and it seems that because of his size, he is getting just out-muscled at times.
Oh, yeah.
No matter how hard he tries.
Crap kicked out of him.
Yeah. And you know, it's not through lack of trying.
He's a little train that could, though. Oh, I love watching him play.
A little train that certainly tries. I'll give you that. Now, there have been some really dumb ideas floating around in Sens fandom over the past week, especially in the past 48 to 72 hours. And I think one of the dumbest ones that I've seen so far is, and I've seen it from a couple of different, or heard it from a couple of different sources, that that the coach should put Carlson up as a forward. And every time I hear it, I just shake my head. I don't understand why somebody would think this is a good idea, because A, he's not going to play 30 minutes as a forward like he plays 30 minutes on the blue line. B, if he's not on the blue line, and playing half the game to try and get the puck out of our zone, who's going to?
it's just this desperation coming from fans to do something.
Do something.
Well, exactly.
Don't do that.
I just think it's ludicrous.
He's not.
That's not the understanding issue. The game and what he does. Because yeah. He's a point shot.
If you bring him up into the forward role, like he's not going to be able to break out of the zone the same way. You're going to limit his time and space. That's not his game.
He doesn't have the size that Brent Burns has. That's why Brent Burns is able to do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Carlson weighs probably the same as me. Now he's probably 7 inches taller than me, which just tells you how fat I am right now. But he's going to get creamed.
Yeah. Well, he's a bit shorter than I am, and I weigh about the same as him.
Yeah.
There's no way I can be one. I mean, I remember during FanFest meeting Eric Greiba and meeting Zach Smith and some of these other guys, and I'm like, okay.
He's not going to play wing anyway. Yeah.
No, I'm tall, but I'm not particularly wide, and you guys are friggin' huge. Unreal. Dumb idea. Yeah. I'm just getting sick of it. There's been a lot of talk of trade rumors over the past couple of days, some of which are heating up, some ridiculous, some interesting, and some I just don't understand. First one I wanted to throw out there for opinions was the one that came to surface a couple of days ago, which was apparently, according to some sources, that the Ottawa Senators are inquiring about Martin Havlat.
Why?
That's a great answer. I like that one. Pan, your reaction?
Wasn't that my reaction? I think I tweeted Brennan on that one. I was like, no! Why would you? It's like, unless they're retaining all of the salary and all the salary cap and we're giving you nothing in return, maybe.
But that would still be a roster spot filled up by someone who's just
injured.
Oh, yeah, like Joe Corvo's doing anything right now.
Well, he's injured, but
okay.
What would be the point?
Have left for Corvo.
Fine.
Have left for Corvo. And they take all the money, and yeah, they're done.
If they retain his salary, but he's another year after this one.
They can retain that salary, too.
But it still means he's roster spot for 2 years. Listen, not
if you're going to say that you're ridiculous for taking him, I'm just going to give you a ridiculous back. You're going to take Corvo and $6 million.
Corvo and what?
They're going to take Corvo and retain the $6 million salary. I still wouldn't make
They have to pay. They have that. Okay, fine. Give us 3 first-round picks because we got all that cap room.
No, well, we already have the equivalent of 3 first-round picks. Remember?
We have the equivalent of 3 first-round picks. We don't actually have them.
Yeah, and, but that's got to go get them.
Exactly. So we need to go and get them. So
San Jose first-round picks are always real good places to pick, right?
Huh. Hey, they picked up some great players in the past few years. I wouldn't mind.
They're always bottom 10. Anyway. Yeah, no. No, thank you.
Well, they got Logan Couture a few years ago. I seen
Next.
No, I understand. Okay, fine. If you want to give us Logan Couture.
I'd be all for it. All in. Next name that was mentioned, I started hearing it today, was Michael Delzotto, defenseman with New York. Now, I have to say, I don't know how he's been playing in New York lately. I remember him from his junior days playing in Oshawa, where he was the setup guy for John Tavares.
Yeah.
And he was very good at that. Yeah. Well, there was
an audio. You know why I was out today? It's because I was talking about it yesterday.
Well,
it's always friggin' happens to me.
It was, there was a clip from Vigneault saying, well, you know, I've heard he's a good player. I just haven't seen any of that yet. It's like, what the hell was that? That's like,
Michael, get under the bus.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think. I just blanked out. The coach who was throwing the goalie in Tampa Bay under the bus. Torts. No, not Torts.
Tampa.
Yeah. When I'm going back a few years here.
Happy Boolin?
No. Anyway, can't remember. It'll come to me probably 2 or 3 hours from now, but I just thought that was a shocking thing for a coach
Rick
to say.
Rick Tabarachi?
Nope.
Wow. That was a poll.
Moving on. Quick question. Who would you be willing, or better, this might be an easier question. If a trade was proposed, who would you not be willing to part with off this team? Absolutely, positively, no way you would ever allow them to move.
Chris Neal.
Carlson?
Carlson, okay. Anybody else? See, this is the question I asked myself. And after Carlson, I was hard pressed to come up with another name that I would not, under any circumstances, move.
You have to give me a lot for Leonard and Zibanejad.
Mathot.
Ryan.
Turris. Ryan, I can give up, but you got to give me a ton.
That's what I mean. I'm putting them under your category. So people who I would give up, but you'd have to get a ton for. Turris, Ryan, Zibanejad, Leonard. Spezza?
Nah.
You not get anything back for Spezza.
What was that?
I'm kidding. I'm in a mood. Conditional pick.
Something about setting the place on fire is what I heard. Okay, your stapler's in the drawer there, Penn.
The red stapler?
Nice. Yeah, Carlson's untouchable.
Yeah.
Unless you give me Crosby and Malkin.
And a first round pick.
And a first round, and three first round picks. Three
first round picks. Well, I was.
MacArthur has a no trade? Come on.
Canuck made a good joke the other day, which was Anderson to Florida for Barkov and Tim Thomas. And at first I'm like, yeah, whatever. And then I thought about it and I went, you know what? I'd make that trade.
They wouldn't.
Yeah, they wouldn't make that trade.
I'd make it because that's a good return on Anderson and because Tim Thomas would never come here.
So he likes playing here. Anyway. He likes playing here.
We would suspend him and not have to pay him.
I think that voids it. No, you can do it that way.
He likes playing here. What are you guys talking about? He even said that.
What?
What was that?
He likes playing here.
Where? Anderson?
Tim Thomas.
Oh, that's because he kills us all the time.
He likes playing here, but I don't think he likes playing here as the visiting team.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd like playing here as the home team because of things like, I don't know, taxes.
Yeah, not a 48%
tax in his world.
Their incomes are, I think their marginal tax rate, if not their average, is probably around 45% in Florida. It's zero.
Exactly. So I don't see that happening. But I would actually make that trade. I know Barkov's very young, but I'd make that trade.
Well, I don't know if his family's still in Colorado, but with Varlamov going through what he's going through, he might be there next year.
Yeah, could be. Now, at the moment, the 2014 draft, we're down two picks already.
Oh, I misread this. I thought you meant it was a thin draft.
Mm. No, it's not that great a draft.
Where's the draft this year?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Detroit?
I'll look it up. Oh,
cool. Okay, Pan looked that up. Right now, we're missing our first round pick, which went to Anaheim with Silverberg and Nason for Bobby Ryan. And we have no sixth round pick either because that went to Minnesota for Cassian. So
big deal. Sixth rounder. So you can get another Colin Greening that scored zero goals.
Man, you're bitter tonight.
Yeah, he is.
What about Alfredson was a sixth round pick?
There you go. So
one
was,
out of 20 years.
So was Pavel Datsyuk.
2 out of 20 years.
I think it's in
Philly. Okay, so,
in trades, I think that any trade that the team makes, we need to look at having a draft pick come back as well, even if it means we have to throw in something else from our side. You think we need to? If they're looking for something and a prospect, it's like okay, but we're taking whatever's coming back and a pick.
Well, the way they're playing right now, the Sens have already thrown in the towel.
Not yet.
I don't think so.
They're getting close.
I don't think
with
so.
With Florida and Buffalo out, we're going to hang on.
To what? 10th
both Florida
spot?
And Buffalo gave up. And with Stamkos hurt, who knows how Tampa's going to fall? I don't think they have, but.
Yeah, we'll have to see about that. On the other side of the coin, Binghamton. Bit of a tear at the moment. Six straight wins. Team's record is 11-4. And they're still fourth in their conference because the three division leaders are ahead of them.
Yeah. Yeah, but they got all our top talent down there. They got Pageau and DaCosta and Hoffman.
Well, I was listening to a couple of chit-chats with, one was with Grady and one was with Luke Richardson on the radio in the past few days. And both of them said that if there's a scoring... Now, if there's a call goes down to Binghamton saying we need a winger who's scoring, they both said independently of each other that Mike Hoffman is on a tear since the beginning of the season. And they both said he had a really rough camp. He had a bad camp up here in Ottawa, but since he's got down there, he's been playing really well. He has 9 goals, 10 assists, and he's a plus 4.
He's going to be up within a matter of time.
I would imagine.
Camp doesn't mean much anyways, right, Pageau?
Exactly. So, versus DaCosta. versus Sabinajad. So, I mean, it's all...
He's now top line.
Yeah. So, it's a kind of a rotating thing. But they also were talking about Borowiecki and how his puck skills are much better than last year.
Totally agree with that.
And he's tough. And he is a gamer. Like, he'll go. But he's really started to pick his spots rather than be reckless all the time and you know, take fights when he doesn't need to. So he's really matured, and they're both very, very impressed with him, and they're not at all surprised that he's up here. It's not just the fact that he's on a one-way next year. He's like, he's really matured over last season into this season. He was actually paired with Cody Ceci when he was down there.
Yep.
And as far as Cody Ceci, he was seeing a ton of minutes when he was playing with Borowiecki. It's been balanced out a bit more now that he's playing. Damn it, I didn't write down who he's playing with. Damn, somebody will correct me on that, I'm sure.
Is it Rutkowski?
I think it's actually Zdejo. Rutkowski's in and out of the lineup because he's been going down to Elmira to get more minutes, but he was also up 2 weekends ago. I'm not sure about last weekend. I wasn't really following the B-Sens. I was kind of busy with other stuff. But he's getting fewer minutes, but it's a balancing act that he's getting better at the defensive side of his game. He's been working a lot with Steve Sterling, who's their defense coach, and Jason Smith and Luke Richardson.
Can we get either Sterling or Jason Smith up here?
Well,
Our defense is atrocious.
I thought Jason Smith was up here. That's why I was a little surprised going, I thought he was up here. But anyway, CeCe has 2 goals and 11 assists so far, and he's a plus 5.
So, and this is when people are talking about Dell's auto. He's very, very similar to style to Cody Ceci.
Yeah.
So why trade for that when we have one coming up next year? The way that he's playing too, I'd be real surprised if he's not up.
I'm not sure who. I'm not sure how long his contract is. How much time he has left on his contract. I didn't bother to look, to be honest.
This year, 2.2, then he's an RFA.
Dell's auto?
Yep.
Really? It's interesting. Yep. Well,
you could just change type of defenseman, maybe send a Greiber or something like that.
I was going to say, or it may end up being something like Weirkosh goes the other way. They want a puck mover. We take a puck mover.
Delzato is a puck mover.
I know. So?
They want a different puck mover?
They may.
No, they've got that. I was going to say TJ Lincoln, but that's TJ. JT Miller. JT Miller, they've got too.
I bet JT Miller doesn't hate as much as TJ.
JT Miller scores goals. That's why.
Do we ever tell the story on TJ?
No.
I don't think so. Go ahead.
No. What do you want us to?
I don't know.
Wasn't there.
I think he was fine with it. Based on what he said. So, you know, one of our listeners and the guy in the forum, we met him at he took us to the San Jose game, TJ. I think he goes by TJ Lincoln or something in the forums. Well, it was back early in the day. His name's Jim. And you're like, okay, what's with the TJ? And what it was,
he told us, he's like, don't use the word TJ in front of my nephew.
Yeah, he won't know what you're talking about, right? When he signed up for the forums, he just gave like a username the same as his email. And it wasn't even his email, it was friends.
Yep.
And it was like a friend, I think they're married or something. There's a couple, like the husband's name was T, the wife's name was J, and the dog's name was Lincoln. So TJ Lincoln. So the dog gets the name fully spelled out, but.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Cool. You know, we just got stuck with it.
We don't have much content right now, so we're just going back to things from 5 weeks ago.
That's pretty good.
Remember that time we told a joke and it was funny? Yeah.
Well, no.
Butt scratch, yeah.
Timely. We've got a few things to talk about around the league because there's a few things we might be able to stir up a little bit on. A couple of bits about Detroit, which I thought might be interesting. Patrick Eves was waived on November 14th, last Thursday.
There you go. He's a first round pick. Go get him, Brian Burke.
Well, he cleared and he's on his way to Grand Rapids. And one article I was reading about it's really because they're trying to get him more ice time with some other team. It's not that they don't like his play. It's just they don't really have space for him at the moment. He's 1.2 million. He's a UFA, I think, at the end of this year. But that means with him down in the minors, they actually, Detroit has $4 million buried in the AHL right now.
Well, that's all right. Because Toronto's got $4 million buried with John Michael Lyles.
But it's still a chunk of the
cap. They're paying Darcy Tucker one.
Yes, that's true too.
We got to run that one into the ground because this is our last.
This is our last opportunity this year. That's true. But I just thought $4 million was an awful lot to have buried. I don't know. Just thought it was an interesting number. I'm not talking about player 11. I'm not getting into that.
Yeah, but whatever.
Getting on to, I wanted your opinion on the 3-game suspension for the little weasel from Toronto. Nazem Kadri for his hit on Backstrom and Granlund, but he only got, disciplined for the hit on Backstrom. 3-game suspension. What do you think?
Whatever.
No, Backstrom got hurt. 5.
Okay, well, that goes into my next question.
Leaf discount.
Well, he got a 3-game suspension last year for a headshot. Lupul got 2. And earlier this year, John Scott got 7.
Therefore, Kadri gets 3.
They were all first offenders. They were all headshots.
7, 5, 3. Next one's a 1-game.
7, 3, and 2.
What's that thing called with the numbers 1, 2, 3, 5, 7?
Prime numbers?
No. Well, that too, but it's the...
Not
Da Vinci Code.
Breaking news.
Oh.
Yep.
MacArthur scored.
You did it! Nice!
Awesome. Well done.
Unconfirmed rumors. None of us have visibility on this game, do we?
Nope.
I'm not following.
Unconfirmed rumors that they're wearing the new Heritage jersey at this game.
I don't think I think they're just wearing the normal Heritage jersey, not the one for the Heritage Classic coming up in March. I don't know. I don't have a TV near me where I am right now.
I like Gabrielle's tweet right now too. I've never seen Cowan skate so fast. We are missing something.
Well, let's get finished this, and we'll see part of it coming later on.
See you next week.
It's been 17,005 days since the Toronto Maple Leafs won the Stanley Cup. 17,000. I thought you'd like that. Nice round number, 17,005.
Wow.
There's been a lot. Yeah, it's a staggering number, isn't it? And they've been playing every single season in that period of time.
Oh, but for some reason, they rule and we suck.
Clearly.
Well, I don't even think we've had 17,000 games.
Well, I mean, the Senators weren't playing
really
long time. If you count the number of games played, I really should do this one of these days. Number of games played since the team won the Stanley Cup. Because, yeah, the Senators last won it in 1929?
They didn't. Okay, whatever. They were reimagined. They're the zombie of the previous ones, whatever.
Right, so We have 22 seasons worth of games.
We've got no ties to those players anymore. So we started up fresh. We just kept the name.
Okay. Even still. So we've played
since 1992, we haven't won.
But number of games played is what I want to examine. Like number of games played since 1967 versus number of games played since the beginning of the 92-93 season.
Or just number of games played since there's 30 teams on the league. Which is pretty close to when Ottawa joined. So.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
A lot of talk right now about Anderson being worth a first round pick, maybe more than that. I keep hearing that. Mm-hmm. Toronto Maple Leafs recently traded for Peter Holland, a center, because they're so short of centers, and Brad Staubitz. Peter Holland was a first round 15th overall 2009 pick for Anaheim. Brad Staubitz, tough guy, can fight, gritty, not great hands, role player, fourth line guy. So a first-round pick and a role player. And what did they pay for that? A 3rd and a 7th and a minor league defenseman. A first-round pick from 4 years ago, and they paid for that. What they traded was a minor leaguer, a 3rd and a 7th. Anderson really going to be getting a first-round pick right now? I don't think so.
Give me a second. Give me a second.
Anyway, while you're looking up whatever you're looking up, I have to admit, you actually asked me to put this in. I didn't.
Jim O'Brien was a first round pick.
Oh, yes.
Patrick Reeves was a first-round pick.
But are we going to get anything close to a third and a seventh for any of them?
Matthew Schwenard was a first-round pick twice!
No, only once. First he was a third-round pick the second time.
I don't think I'd even trade Anderson for a first-round pick.
No,
I think he's worth more value riding this team, even if it means he walks away, than just to have a pick.
A pick I is agree. Potential. I want a body.
Yeah,
I agree. I don't want to see him traded this season at all.
The thing is that teams that need a goalie, if you're a cup contender, you don't need a goalie.
Well, that's just it, right?
You're not going to pay that.
Unless you're a cup contender and your goalie suddenly goes down near the trade deadline. And then you have to just consider, are you still a cup contender if your goalie goes down? Question mark. Who knows?
If you can buy one, right?
Well, if you can buy a Craig Anderson, do you still consider yourself a cup contender? Hard to say. It's a lot of ifs. I agree wholeheartedly. That's why I'm like, so really sick of this talk.
The only thing that I can think of that actually needs a goalie is Calgary now, because Edmonton is smoked in the fact that they think that they've solved their problems with the universe.
Now,
but they don't have anything to give back.
Who, Florida?
Calgary.
Oh, Calgary.
Florida doesn't need one.
Take Sean Monahan. Not likely.
So
since he's one of the reasons where they are even though they're losing a lot of late.
And even that, I'd pick up Ryan Miller before I'd pick up Anderson if I was the other team.
Well, it certainly gives you a better chance to offload in the offseason since he's a UFA. You can decide whether you want to keep him or not.
Yeah. Miller will be gone, and he is going for a first and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Now, one other trade we wanted to talk about, and then we got some email to get into, which is going to take a little while because we've got a fair number of them. Some of them are long, but they've got good discussion points in them.
Yep.
Last thing I want to talk about was the Florida-Chicago trade last Thursday.
Oh, we missed Princess Fanoff.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll go back and... You see, okay. I don't understand that reference, so... I know that it was John Scott who said it, but I wasn't watching the game that it was involved with, so take it away.
Okay, great. So I just really want to talk about this. John Scott was lining up FNUF for a hit. FNUF bailed on it. The way that he bailed was actually just a slide down, at which point his legs and feet, and then therefore skates, ended up hitting John Scott. John Scott got in a whole bunch of trouble with it and saying that he was trying to hit the star player, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so afterwards, John Scott came out in an interview saying, I didn't know we weren't allowed to hit the stars. Someone like Princess Fenef just comes down and bails on me. Blah, blah, blah. Then Fenef just came back and he's just like, well, I've been called a lot of things, but I've never been called a princess before.
And I kind of like it.
It makes me feel special.
Tell me again, Daddy. You know what word that you have been called, FNUF?
Overrated!
Suck it, FNUF.
Suck it, princess.
And you bailed. You bailed.
Oh, yeah. He wants to deliver the big hit, but as soon as someone's trying to deliver one on him...
No!
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Ridiculous.
Anyway.
It's a double Dion.
Wanted to talk just briefly about the Florida-Chicago trade, because I thought this was really interesting. And Chris Versteeg and Philip Lefebvre went to Chicago. And in return, Florida got Jimmy Hayes, who's a 6'6", second-round pick, and he's a winger, and Dylan Olsen, who's a first-round pick. And Hayes, at least, is already paying for Florida. Now, Florida retained half of Versteeg's salary for this season and for the next two. So they retained $2.2 million per season this season and for two seasons after this.
They bought the prospect.
You think?
Yeah.
I think there's more than that. I think,
they were helping out Versteeg, in my opinion. Like, listen, this is going to go just fall apart. You want to go back to Chicago? I'll get you there.
Well, if he's so good, why would they have to retain his salary to be able to buy prospects?
It's a good fit for Chicago. Hey, Chicago, you don't want to miss it with the chemistry. So you add a piece that you know. Great.
And it keeps Chicago under the cap ceiling. And it keeps Florida above the cap floor.
So we're going to take apparently one of your top prospects and give you this high end. I wouldn't necessarily say high end, but very, very useful second to third line player.
Which one? LeFace?
Versteeg. Probably second, third line.
Probably. But $6.6 million, close to buy two picks. That's a pretty steep price.
That's not even picks. It's prospects. So they know their development.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Prospects. You're right. Not picks. But that's an awfully steep price to pay. A quick score update before we go into some email that we have. I know we announced the first Ottawa goal. It's now 2-1, thanks to a goal from Mika Zibanejad. I'm not interested in the goal by Minnesota. We'll just skip over that. Now, we got some really good email, which we're going to have a little bit of discussion on some of them at least. And you're up with the first one from Scott.
All right. So, Scott's subject, Mark Borowiecki, or Borowiecki. Good afternoon, gentlemen. First off, I'm a big fan of the show. Thank you for taking the time to do this for all the fans. I'd like to know your opinion of Borowiecki's future with the organization. You see him here long term. Thanks and keep up the great work. Scott in Rochester, New York.
Well, there's a conflict of interest. You're in Rochester, the city of the Rochester Americans, and you have to follow players from the Binghamton Senators.
Oh, well, that's Shane Prince's
hometown. Borough's up here now, so that's
you
okay.
You can't hack it.
Oh, it's Shane Prince's hometown, Rochester. It's okay.
All right.
It's all fine. I think he actually does have a future with this team. Not just because he has a one-way contract, but because the development he's had in Binghamton and how much his game has improved, and the fact that he's up here already means that an awful lot of people are impressed with how well he's played so far this year and his development compared to this time last year. I think he'll be here for a while, even if it means we have to, well, obviously a spot will have to be made for him, but whether it's Corvo, Phillips, Greiba, Weirkosh, somebody's going to be moving out. He'll be moving in. I see him being here, especially in the longer term. Yes. Ben?
I really like Borowiecki because he was the first NHL player that I've ever met. And that's why I know how to pronounce his last name. But the type of game that he plays, it's hard-hitting defensive defenseman, which is identical, if not similar, to Greiba and Cowan. So we've got three of these guys that just really identical. Cowan's got more upside potential, I think. He hasn't shown it this year, though.
But since when is being identical a bad thing, right? Like, oh, well, we got another scoring forward.
They're not top four.
Yeah.
No, they're not top four. That's the thing, because you need a mix of style.
I think you could put him in a
and
second pairing with the right part.
Like if you have six Anton Volchenkovs, it's like, yeah, you're going to block a lot of shots and throw a lot of hits, but when you got zero goals from the back end, that's a problem.
I think he's here to stay.
I hope so. And I really like having all these local guys with Borowiecki, CC coming up, and Mark Mathot. They're all local.
Yep.
And Benoit from last year, Cortland Winchester from before that, Karkner, all local guys, all good guys.
Yep. I like having all of them together too. It makes it neat. And people actually care. There's got to be some good Branson.
Or Dan Boyle.
Good brand. Boyle can coach.
True enough. Right. On to the next one. Ben, are you ready for this one?
Yep.
You're going to take some heat because everybody takes some around here. Lord knows I do. Usually from you two. This is from Imogen. The subject is reason to be cheerful, a small rant. And this was sent last Sunday, so the circumstances have changed a little bit since it was written, but I still think it's an excellent email. So here we go. First of all, love the podcast. I recently moved home to the UK. God, I'll do anything to get away from Leaf fans. And there's a definite lack of people to talk to or to listen to hockey-related opinions here. Your podcast is great at keeping me up to date with Sens and NHL news, so thanks for that. However, I've had enough of the negativity. It's not just you guys, Pan, but all over Twitter and, when I dare brave it, HF boards. The bipolar fandom is baffling to me, and believe me, I'm your stereotypical, cynical Brit. Take the last games for an example. 3 wins and a loss. I'll take it. Admittedly, the loss was a crap show, and I regret staying up till 3:30 to watch that one. But it was to a team with huge high-end skill that beat the Pens in the next game and are definitely looking to be on the way up. And look, it lit a fire under the Sens, who went out and scored 4 unanswered goals versus the Bruins, with Andy in net, no less. It's not all doom and gloom. Turris and MacArthur look brilliant together. Ryan is doing exactly what we brought him in for. There's a good sort of goalie controversy. Zibanejad is coming along nicely. The same can be said for Grant and Borokop. And Cowan, well, still looking a little shaky, but seems to be beginning to realize his role and settling in a bit better. This brings me nicely to the third year rebuild topic and unrealistic expectations. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the third year of a rebuild should not be the year that a team is expected to win the Stanley Cup. A realistic expectation would be to reach the playoffs and show some ability to compete. Above Ottawa in the wildcard standings are a Habs team that are tailspinning and a Detroit team that can't win or lose in regulation. Both, by the way, have played 2 more games than the Sens. To get into the playoffs isn't unachievable. If the Sens build on the Bruins game, and once you're there, who knows what could happen. You could draw the eventual winner or a soft, easy opponent. My point is, stop panicking. The Sens look like a team in the final rebuild year, and that's perfectly okay with me. Thanks, and apologies for the rant. Imogen. Thank you. A well-thought-out email, and not just because you take a shot at Pan, but I'll always rebuild this.
I don't remember being bipolar because I don't think I was positive at all.
I think this, she means a lot of the fans are being bipolar.
Yeah.
One point on
that Boston game, yeah, that didn't happen, did it? We're missing it right now, though.
No, it could be happening now and we're missing it. We don't know.
Well, it didn't work but in Philadelphia.
I think the most important thing in this entire email is the realistic expectations thing. Because, I mean, honestly, in the last 2 years, this team exceeded everybody's expectations in a rebuild. Made the playoffs 2 years in a row in a rebuild. So now everybody's
in a rebuild.
And competed. So, yeah. So now everybody
expects... But where she says, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but the third year of a rebuild should not be the year where the team is expected to win the Stanley Cup. A realistic expectation would be to reach playoffs and show some ability to compete. Haven't they done that already? So what my whole point out of all of this is, if this is a rebuild, we should be a cup contender. We're not.
But it the rebuild, okay. Because they did better than expected, we now should be a cup contender.
Contender, not winner.
Contender. Not winner, contender. But, so we're not Chicago or Boston.
Okay. But the rebuild involves an ongoing change. It's not just you tear everything down and you start from the bottom. It's an ongoing process. There's tearing down every year. That's why it's a 3-year process. It's not just done in 1 year. It's not, maybe I'm using the wrong perspective, but I don't look at it as this is Detroit. And I mean, Detroit, the city, not the team, where there's a block of abandoned buildings. So we tear everything down and we start rebuilding. So in the first year, we tear everything down. The second year, we built the foundations. And the third year, we build the first and second floors of the houses and everything is done. To me, it's more like in the first year, we tore down some of the houses and we built some. And the second year, we tore down some more houses and we built some. And the third year, we tore down some houses and we built some. And then the neighborhood is going to be looking better.
Okay, right. But when it comes to hockey, in that third year, the houses they built in the first year are starting to wear down. Or become more expensive.
Yep. Exactly. It's a little, steps forward, steps back, steps forward, steps back, steps forward, steps back. It's not a continual upswing. So well, if the first 2 years were really good, that doesn't mean the third one's going to be even better than the first two.
No. There's no guarantees.
There's no guarantee in sport, right? Because an injury or something that could hurt you, but... We had that last year. Last year was a write-off. If you would have told me with all the injuries that we had that we would have made the playoffs and we'd be like bottom five, you'd be like, yeah, we didn't have a goalie. We didn't have a star defenseman. We didn't have a number one center. I don't even remember who else was hurt, but it was just a disaster. But they were able to overcome it. This year they're not, and they've got everyone. And they've got too many guys.
Yeah.
They've got everyone, but they're also some guys playing in some very different roles from last year. And they may not be able to, and some of them are coming back from very serious injuries that they haven't fully recovered from.
I just think that if it wasn't for Melnick being a Looney Tune most of the time, Ottawa would be a very attractive place for people to come and play.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have two thoughts on this. One being, you know, talking about the bipolar fans. Well, I see it on Twitter and other social media where you get these people, it's like they lose and it's like, I'm not watching this team anymore and that kind of stuff. Okay, make fun of those people because that's just dumb. But this is a sports. I'm going to get high when the team's high. I'm going to get low when the team's low. I mean, that's part of being a fan. If I can't be critical that they're not playing very well, I'm going to say they're not going to play very well. I'm going to be disappointed. When they're playing great, I'm going to say they're playing great. That doesn't make me... or anyone else, you know, a bad fan. That's just, you know, riding the roller coaster of a NHL season, right? And if we just sit here and talk positive about the team the whole time, well, we're going to be pretty boring to listen to. But on the rebuild thing, like the 3-year rebuild is just something that Murray threw out. The point is the last couple seasons we've overachieved, and this season it's not that we're even meeting expectations. We're just going in a really wrong direction. And it's one thing, you know, if the team loses on the ice, it's early in the season. Well, we're getting up to the quarter mark now out of a playoff spot. But it's the other stuff combined with the losing, which is really getting to everybody. It's this stuff that Melnick's saying that, you know, well, now we got this team budget and now we're not doing well and oh, the attendance is down and stuff. It's just a lot of question marks start coming up. And then a lot of question marks come up on the ice and you get this uneasy feeling and you wonder what's going on.
You're not going to be able to track top talent with that either.
No.
So what's the, I guess I can see the point with that, yeah. But I think that people's expectations are artificially inflated this year because of massive overachievement in the two previous years.
Well, sure, and I think one of our eventual emails are going to read here points that out too, and right?
And I think that's where I get frustrated is because, well, we should be better than we were last year because we don't have as many injuries.
We set ourselves up for failure.
Yeah, absolutely true. We don't have as many injuries as last year. Absolutely true. We also have a lot more young players in bigger roles, especially where we're struggling brutally in our own zone.
But where are we missing that?
Sergei Gonchar. For all the things that people dumped on him last year.
And dare we say?
Incredibly steady back there last year. He got the job done. Simple.
So, because really we've lost Alfredsson and Gonchar.
And clearly they had a bigger impression on this team than we thought.
And both of them are doing horribly where they are now.
Oh, yeah. For everybody who keeps saying, oh, well, we miss Alfredsson. Alfredsson has 2 more assists than Milan Mikolic. Same number of goals. That's it.
Can we trade Mikolic for Alfredsson?
Yeah.
Wrong wing. But, I mean, he's certainly not, you know, racking up the points.
Yeah.
So... I can honestly say I haven't been tracking Gonchar's play in.
He's got Dallas. 1 assist.
Really?
Yeah. Brutal.
Wow. What's plus minus? What time on ice?
I'll look that up.
Okay, I have no clue. I have absolutely none. But yeah. It may be simply.
Might have gotten more points recently, but I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well,
no, I that's really all I wanted to say on this, to be honest. I have to admit, I'm kind of sick of the over and over and over again. Yeah, okay, so the team's struggling. Yep, they are. I admit it. But this constant stream of we need to trade, we need to get rid of this guy.
There's nothing to trade for right now.
There's nothing to trade with right now.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been a couple of trades that have happened so far this year, which are surprising. That they're actually happening this early, but I don't see a reasonable return on anything that we might be willing to part with. So, you know, suck it up and watch how this team plays, because there's nothing that's going to happen that way.
Yeah, now, of course, just, we're not out of it yet, and we tend to play well against the division.
Yeah, I mean, far be it for me to say that Brian Murray isn't going to pull a rabbit out of his hat like he's already done in the past couple of years with some of the... I mean, I think overall his trade record is positive, especially if you look at some of the ones he's done in the past couple of years. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility that he could pull off something either big or very strategic that works out, because he's a very, very shrewd hockey mind.
Yeah. Here I've got Gonchar's numbers. Last year, 45 games, 3 goals, 24 assists, 27 points, obviously. Plus minus plus 4. Okay. Don't have his Corsi numbers. So, well.
Who cares?
this year, 20 games played, 0 goals, 3 assists, minus 5.
Ooh, what's his average time on ice?
Oh, no, I don't look that up.
Okay.
I might have it now.
I'm just curious. I don't know. I don't even know what pairing he's played in. I guess you can actually talk to, when you go to the game tomorrow, Canuck, or whatever day it is this week that you're going, maybe you can have a look, or ask around and see what kind of pairing he's playing in, or see if anybody has stats like that. I'm just curious. I have no idea how it's going in Dallas. So
let's see if I can get a clip from him too. Hi, this is Sergei Gonchar, and you're listening to my old friends from Ottawa.
Oh, God. That'd be awesome.
Average time on ice, 18.34.
That's down from last year too then.
Yeah.
Interesting. And he's still making $5 million a year.
He's not in a contract year though.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's just it.
All right, Canuck, you're up.
Yeah,
you're up for the next one.
Email from Adam. Hey, fellas. I'll open with, I love the podcast, and as a Sens fan living in Leafland, I think of you guys as my Sens buddies, who I can talk some real puck with, though mostly I do the listening. I don't always agree with what you have to say, Ben, but I respect your opinions.
You've had a hard day, guys. Come on.
So, seems like we've been dealt a rough hand of scent as Sens fans this year. What with the team struggles and the Leafs' success, but that's okay by me. Full disclosure, I expected this year to be a hard year. We've been extremely lucky with this rebuild. Brian Murray said that it was a 3-year rebuild, and we're now in the final of these 3 years. Do you think that Murray expected the team to be in the playoffs the first 2 years? I don't think he did, but no GM worth their salt's going to tell the fans and media that the players are overachieving. We have a lot of players on this roster that are still very young and experienced, and we've seen these players struggle with the so-called sophomore slump. How many of this roster are in that sophomore stage of their career right now? As the advanced stats guys would say, regression was expected. Add to that, after last season injuries, we effectively injected 3 new players into the lineup, Spezza, Carlson, and Cowan. Those are guys that are going, that were gone long-term last year and have to rebuild on the ice with the chemistry. This doesn't include the addition of Bobby Ryan, MacArthur, and I would forget about Corvo if I could. I remember a particular baseball team that bought a lot of players and then struggled to get it together. Yeah. Down there in Leafland. Then we have the loss of he who must be not named, and it sounds like Gonchar was really helping out the back end with his leadership and experience. Goaltending last season was astounding and awesome, but not sustainable. All told, we have a wonderful recipe for a disaster season. I would have preferred not to have made the Ryan trade. I won't deny that Ryan's been one of the best players on this team this year, but the price was too high. I understand why Murray did it, but I don't like it. Proving once again his value as a GM, Brian made a move to keep himself out of the fan base's crosshairs post-Alfie. Though that may not last if we end up with a pick in... We end up with a pick in the top 5. Yeah, because we don't have a first round pick. This has gotten lengthy, so I'll keep the rest short. My outlook for the rest of the season is to buckle up and enjoy the ride. Celebrate the little victories and shrug off the negatives. We are a team that is coming together and learning. McCulloch is a rental who I would move for at the end of the year, but for a new bucket for the ice crew. Greening looks good, angry, and should stay that way. I'm fine with however the team and coaching staff want to manage and develop young guys like DJ Zibad, Pajot, gotta sing the song every time I hear that name, Grant, Stone, Hoffman, CC, whoever. Our management and coaching staff got where they are by knowing players and how to get the best out of them, not by playing money puck. A real fan would agree that the long-term sustained success of this team is what matters. Sometimes, yeah, you love a bad team. Welcome to fandom. Carlson will get it back. Spezza will find a line mate that works. Patience is the order of the day. Finally, I'm probably the biggest Cowan fan out there. I still sport his jersey every game day and honestly believe that the kid is going to be a champion at all levels, but that is a discussion for another day. He needs to hit something. Hit something hard. Cowan, hit harder!
Bang!
He's thinking too much and plays his best when he's punishing people. Maybe he needs to be sat for a game or two and watch what Borocop does. When he gets angry, he will return to form. Thanks for listening. My first email is lengthy, but there will probably be more and will probably get longer. Cheers, fellas. Adam. Or, as I know online, Cowan for Captain.
Oh, geez. Change your name.
That was a long read, but thank you.
One thing I was thinking about after I read this email the first time.
Mm-hmm.
With the Ryan trade. If Murray wanted more PR, they should have announced, because he knew the night before that Alfredson wasn't going to sign. He should have pulled the trigger to be able to announce it before trade deadline opened or UFA opened.
Well, it's an interesting thought. He may not have been able to get a hold of them.
Oh yeah.
No. I'm pretty sure they did. Unless they're trying to hold up to get something else. That might have been Neeson instead of another pick. I don't know. Or maybe finalizing between Zibanejad and Silverberg.
Yeah, I was going to say it could have been that too.
But could you imagine if Ottawa would have said, "We've now traded for Bobby Ryan," and then Alfredson leaves instead of the other way around?
You make a strong point.
That would have been much different.
Yep, much different. Good point. I think that the price that was paid for the Bobby Ryan trade was high, no question. But I think it was the right move to make.
You know what price is really high? Mm-hmm. Clarkson finally got his first.
Yeah, I'm laughing about that contract. Another 7 years, another 6 years after this one at $5+ million. Love that. That's a good way to laugh at the laughs, the yard wastes, whatever. So, thank you for that email, though. Lots of good points. Some we agree with, some we don't, but that's okay. That's what we want to hear.
Why is everyone dumping on me?
Because it's fun.
Hey, it means I don't have to. Ben, you're up for the next one from Sam.
This is probably going to be something I'm going to like here. Sam, subject, almost punched a baby last night.
That sounds up your alley.
What?
Well, figuratively, of course. Last night against Philly was frustrating and just sucked because we looked pretty good all game. But we need to win games. And how do we do that? I emailed a couple weeks ago and said I didn't think we needed a D-man because Cowan and Wirkosh must be getting better. Ha, I was so wrong. We obviously need a right-handed D-man, and I don't know why he said right-handed, and Delzato is not the answer. Delzato is also a left-hand shot. My dream is Dan Boyle, a good old Ottawa boy. Thumbs up. He has the experience, right-hand shot, and the ability to move the puck. There has been talk of trade with him involved, but what we'd have to give up? Cowan grabbing a prospect like Hoffman and a fourth or third, is he worth it? Is that a realistic deal? Thoughts? Sam, the biggest Sens fan in Atlantic Canada. I guess I kind of tore this apart while reading it. We need a left-hand shot. That's why Chris Phillips is on the power play, because he's the left-hand shot.
And believe me, that's frustrating when you see them try to do the cross-ice pass, and it's going, they have to take the pass across the body, and they can't do the one-timer. Oh,
yeah,
it's frustrating. Yeah.
And then when you think of it, because Zach Smith is their only left-hand, well, Smith and Grant are the left-hand centers, neither one of them play on the power play, so you've just got a ton of right-hand shots. Conacher's a right-hand. McCulloch's a right-hand. Turner's a right-hand. So he plays a point now with a right-handed Carlson. It's just weird. You know, things kind of swing to the right. That's what it's like.
Dan Boyle would be great. But you're going to have to give up a tremendous amount to get him. I'm just not sure if it's worth it. I mean, we're not a contender right now. Why would you give away pieces to a future puzzle
for a
shot with an older guy? Like, it's just not the right time for this. It's the wrong trade to make.
Exactly. And Murray said it in the summer, too, because he didn't really want like a 35-year-old to solve the problems. He wanted a 27, 28-year-old. And God, that Bobby Ryan gave up a lot for it. But listen, yeah, that second line is gold. Gold. Obviously, with MacArthur scoring tonight, they've done it again.
And finding a 28-year-old in their prime defenseman as UFA, good luck. Or that a team is willing to give up on, unless there's an obvious reason why they're trying to give up on him.
I think the lead's gone now. I think it's 2-2.
Yep, 2-2. Yep.
But Dan Boyle's a UFA, so I don't know. I don't know if I want to give up all that much to pick up a UFA who's not young, but it's an interesting thought. Another Ottawa guy. Could be worse.
Do you think maybe San Jose will take those three first-round picks that we apparently have for him?
We don't have first-round picks. We have the equivalent of first-round picks in cap space. Well, we have them, but that's in years to come. I don't want to give those up. Anyway, on to the next email, unless you have more comments on that one.
No, that's it.
No.
Okay. Next one I get is from Landfill. Subject matter, dark times. On Twitter, you asked, rage, tears, numb, question mark. My reply is all of the above. I don't know jack when it comes to line combinations, save percentage, coaching, and I couldn't give a rat's rear end about Corsi. The last two seasons, we had a competitive team, and now, quite frankly, I don't know what we have. On every given night, or afternoon, wink, wink, I don't know which team will be playing. The team that beat the Red Wings 6-1, or the team that can't even beat the Oilers. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, indeed. You can blame goaltending, defense, offense, bad penalties, no power play scoring, etc. It's a mishmash of problems and inconsistencies from the top on down. You brought up expectations following the rebuild in the last podcast. I didn't think we'd be a cup contender this season or even the next, but it did feel like we were building a strong foundation with draft picks, player development in bingo, some key signings, and some great coaching. Call it pesky or whatever else, we were a team that found ways to win. The way things stand now, I just don't see us making the playoffs this year. Plus, no first-round draft pick. Believe me, or I can't believe, I'm already thinking about the draft. Despite the loss to the Penguins in the second round, I still felt positive about where we were headed. But since July 5th, a.k.a. Black Friday, it seems we've been, on a downward spiral. Call it the Alfie curse, but it just seems like nothing is going our way. Melnick's finances and silly comments, free Mika, low attendance, Andy versus Leonard, low shots on goal, and so on. Please don't take this as a negative email as a sign of me abandoning my team. I still wave my Sens flag proudly, even here in the Hab-friendly confines of Gatineau. I'm a fan, pure and simple, and lately there just hasn't been much to cheer about. I will never boo my team or wear a bag like the fans of Yard Waste, but it really sucks to watch our team not just lose, but lose badly. Keep up the great work. Your podcast is the highlight of my week. Go Sens go, Landfill. Thank you, Landfill. Always nice to hear that. It's always nice to get compliments on our work.
Dream bigger, Landfill.
Tell me your thoughts, guys. There have been so much talk about, oh, well, we need to get Bobby Ryan up on the first line with Jason Spezza. And I just don't see the point in doing that. If you were going to move somebody from the second line to the first line, I'd say it should be Clark MacArthur.
Well, I'll tell you, Spezza needs some wingers. That's what he needs.
Well, exactly. Give him a fast left winger. One who's obviously scoring at the moment. But moving Bobby Ryan isn't fast. So I don't see the point in trying to do that. He should be on the first line. He's a really, really good guy. Yeah, but three slow top line players isn't going to work. I don't know. If the coach decides to break up the third line, what do you think about moving MacArthur up?
It just works so well right now, though.
I agree. I think it would be ludicrous.
Spezza and Ryan should work better, but they don't.
But if you move Ryan up, you have to move MacArthur.
Give him Zibanejad. Zibanejad, Spezza.
On the left wing?
Ryan. Yeah. You can do it. He's a center. He can work both sides of the play.
I've never seen him play left wing. I've seen him play right wing.
Well, I think
Ryan's definitely a right winger. That's why I'm wondering. I off the top of my head, and I don't have the greatest memory in the world. I'm the first to admit that. But I can't ever
They're all
recall.
Right shots, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
They're all right shots. I don't know. I think adding someone's the best thing that you can do so that you can actually put Ryan. If you get a speedy guy, drop McCulloch down to the second line with Turris and MacArthur and X with Spets of Ryan. That's going to look damn good, but I don't think we've got the assets or the money to do. Well, money doesn't matter right now because everyone's signed, but we don't have the assets, or I wouldn't want to get rid of the assets to do it.
I think it has to come from within. Now, within can be Binghamton, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's that probably won't be sustainable pressure.
Don't know.
No.
Unless
I don't have the answers. If I did, I mean, probably getting paid for this.
Exactly. Or certainly
we should
being
do a paid episode, see what happens.
I think we'd be making just as much as we are now.
Oh. Didn't we technically lose a quarter?
With all the stuff that we keep buying for this.
I meant landfill. Yes. No. We got another email.
Yes, you got the last one.
Yeah, this is from Todd Van Allen. Subject?
Yes.
Arr! Hidely ho, podcasterinos. Finally got to listen to the last podcast and realized I didn't get to meet up with you at the Florida game when I was in town doing shows. My iPhone crashed that morning after performing to the very intense task of opening Google Maps. Turned into a brick.
No, hold on. Heatley just scored 3-2 Wild.
Heatley?
Yeah.
He hasn't been scoring all year.
No, that's his fourth.
Oh, jeez. Anyway. Spent the entire day trying to restore it and then booking flights on Expedia.ca to travel to Steve Jobs' gravesite so I could relieve myself of the previous night's curry all over his new 6-foot underdocking station. Wow.
That's pretty
good. Apple fan. I'm an Apple boy. So sorry I wasn't able to be contacted, but suffice to say, I got to see a rare, for me, Senators win live without having to drive to Buffalo. Would have been grand seeing you all there. Guess I've had a question for you that I would have asked during the Florida game, during a quiet moment. I think the entire second period would do nicely. It would be this. I get the odd Sens fan on my Comedy Above the Pub, that's Cat P, podcast, and at one point we had a discussion similar to several discussions that you've had regarding the goalie situation. Anderson and Leonard have different styles, and I have to admit, I've never been a fan of the Highlander model of there can only be one. I'd like to see a rotation of goalies playing to match the playing style of the opponents. So I put the pressure on the goaltending coaching staff to scout the team coming up next and decide who the best net fit is to play against them. Helps rotate the goalies in to play to the strengths. There'll be some times when the original thoughts don't work and you have to change the keeper in flight, but I think letting the experts decide would be the key. Ryan McLean, I'd not even be making the call each game. I go to the staff, get the name on a piece of paper, and run with it. Thoughts? Yours in the crack-filled, horror-ridden, Bacchanalian life factory of Floridlandia. Todd Van Allen. Hey, you know that whole Rob Ford business is making news all the way down here in Dallas? It's like worldwide. Yeah. It's crazy.
Was it the after show for The Walking Dead even made fun of him?
it's a spectacle. What do you expect? I'm not surprised it's making news down there. Oh. It's a spectacle. It's ridiculous. It's not Bleeds, but hey, it's good.
I don't think this
Bleeds
is what TVA wanted her opinion on.
No.
No.
I think he probably does do something like that now, the coach, as far as who would be a good matchup in here, as well as looking at the psyche of the team as a whole and of the two goaltenders in specific. And who gives them the best chance to win? I would imagine there has to be some sort of thought like that. But I don't know enough about goaltending to be able to pick out who would be better against a particular team. I just don't. What about you?
Well, the fan approach is to see who lets in the first goal and then say, well, the other guy would have had it.
Yeah.
Or they go with the hot hand, which translates to
win and you're
win.
In. Yeah. I think I know we've talked about it before. I agree wholeheartedly that I'm not this, you know, there can only be one mentality. I think the three of us around the virtual table here agree that Leonard is the future. So, and Anderson is the number one. So I think what you do is you ease that transition as best as you can and try not to pull a Carey Price thing they did in Montreal. In a perfect world, I'd like to see Anderson have 2/3 of starts this season, Leonard 1/3. If he's still around next year, then maybe 50/50.
I can't disagree with that. That sounds pretty sensible.
Next year, 50/50?
If he's still here?
Until, he's still here.
If he's still here. I think there's a good possibility that Anderson will get dealt for something in the offseason.
Possibly at the maybe at the draft, you know.
Draft makes more sense.
It's whenever the best opportunity happens. And if that opportunity doesn't happen, then he'll be around because he's not going to harm us. He'll only help us being around next year, too. So,
absolutely. True. Very true. So, who knows?
Who knows?
The way things are going. Exactly. Thank you, Steely. The way things are going, who knows how it's going to end up. But just hold on tight. We don't know where it's going next, so hold on tight, and we'll see where it goes from there. Thanks, DVA, and thanks to everybody who sent email this week. Lots of good topics to talk about.
So the basically, this whole Sen season so far is like a bad case of diarrhea.
Really frightened to know where you're going with this, but where are you going with this?
Well, just lots of streaky runs, and you just got to hold on tight.
Oh, God.
On that note,
we gotta go.
The week to come is we got this coming Saturday. Actually, yeah, this coming Saturday, the Senators are in Detroit.
Oh gosh, it's 4-2 now.
Are you kidding me?
I don't want to hear that.
Danny Heatley was the fourth goal.
Fourth goal? No, it's 3-2.
My app says 4-2.
Miku Koivu was the fourth.
Oh, for crate. This is going to be your game recap for the friggin' Wild game.
We won't be doing a game recap of the Wild game because we're doing it through the middle of this. And then we're going to go and watch. It's about 10 minutes left, but halfway through the second period. So
remember when we said just slow and steady wins the race?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Trade everyone!
Game 24 is next Sunday. So back-to-backs next weekend. First one in Detroit, second one in Carolina. And then game 25 is next Wednesday. The Senators are in Washington. So we may be doing another recording in the middle of another game again next weekend. We don't know.
Probably not.
Are you here? Do you know?
You asking me?
Yeah.
I won't be back until late Wednesday. So, can't do a Wednesday recording.
All right. Well, next
I'm going on Thursday game then.
Next episode. No, you're not.
You can take away my tickets now.
Is there a game Thursday?
Oh, this is Cynthia.
Yeah, that's a Vancouver one.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Goal is kicked in. 3-2.
What? It's been canceled?
Yeah, kicked in.
Nice. All right. All right, let's get going and let's get out of here so we can actually watch the rest of this game.
No goal!
Folks, email us at podcast@sendscallups.com. Love getting email because it gives us things to talk about as well as giving you the opportunity to state your opinion in front of everybody else. So do that. Visit the forums, join the conversations at sendsunderground.com. The game threads are really good, especially if it's a bad game or a frustrating game. I'm going to be going there as soon as we finish with this tonight. Follow us on Twitter. We tend to interact a fair amount. And until next week, this game looks like it could be a good one or it could be more the same. No idea. I've been saying that at every game this season, so exactly. Spin the wheel, see what happens. Anyway, we're out of here to watch the end of it. Good night, everybody.
Go get Maggie the monkey.
Good night.
Bye.